I think I spelled Peter Molyneux's
Yeah.
I spelled his name wrong, probably, but.
That's okay.
There we go. That's my list.
Okay, Sean, it's finally time. I've been waiting since yesterday. You've told me that you have a really, really good topic today. I am so excited. Oh man, I mean I proposed some topics and you're like, no, I've got a topic that blows them all away.
Yeah.
Okay, give me your topic.
Don't believe the hype.
Oh. I bought into the hype and I'm disappointed now.
No, that's the topic. Don't believe the hype.
Yep.
Oh.
No, that's a good topic. That's a good topic. Because games are at least 90% hype these days, if you notice.
I know, right? Like okay, so do you read a lot of game reviews?
I mean there's very few games I'll buy without reading at least a couple reviews on it. I used to be more into it. I used to be an avid reader of Metacritic.
Oh yeah,
but I don't know. Like a couple of the games that they've kind of that like the general consensus of game journalism has rated low, I've really liked, and some of their like this game is perfect 100%. I've not. So I don't know, but I read reviews with people who are like-minded. Does that make sense?
Sure, just like politics.
Yeah, I get all my gaming reviews from Fox News.
Oh man, yep. Well, I don't read gaming reviews, and it's not like I try and actively avoid them. I just don't have the desire. I don't feel like I need someone else to tell me what games I want to buy. I'm actually a pretty reluctant gamer in a lot of cases, and I have friends telling me, "Oh, you should try this game. It's great. You'll love it." And I'm usually like, no. And not because I don't believe them, but because I do believe them and I will obsess over a said game. I lost many, many hours of sleep over the first weeks of playing Civ 5, which I'm sure I've mentioned on this podcast before.
Yes, yes.
My first Civilization game ever, which diehard fans will probably tell me is not even the best one. So what do I know, right?
Well, I guess I heard that... Again, I haven't been following reviews much lately, but apparently Famitsu gave Kid Icarus a 40 out of 40.
Wow. All right.
Now, that used to mean a lot more. Like, for years, like, Famitsu started, well, Famitsu, in case anybody doesn't know, is like the Japanese video game magazine. And the Fami in Famitsu is for Famicom, because that's when it first started. It reviewed just Famicom games, because that was pretty much the market.
Right.
But anyway, from Famicom all the way to N64, you know, Zelda Ocarina of Time was their... I mean, Ocarina of Time was their first perfect review.
Oh, and when you do so that, like, you open the floodgates, right?
So, like, well, no. And then for years, there wasn't another perfect review.
Huh.
I think the next one was a Vagrant Story.
Okay.
Like Square Enix RPG. Maybe I might have my timeline wrong, but like there were years in between their perfect reviews before. But now I think in the last 4 years they've given out like 11 perfects.
Wow.
And kind of questionable titles there. I mean, titles I've loved myself, but really the perfect, like Bayonetta got a perfect.
Uh-huh.
The Xbox 360 version, not the PlayStation 3 version.
Wow, why was it wrong with the PlayStation 3 version?
It was a port of the Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know? So
Famitsu actually gave a perfect to an Xbox game? Those dirty foreigners?
I know. Well, but it was developed in Japan.
Right.
I don't know. But, like, several Wii games have gotten perfect, too.
Mm.
Which is interesting. Smash Brothers Melee. Mm. Not Melee, sorry. What's Brawl? Or is it Melee? Brawl, that's it, the Wii one.
The Wii one, yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons I don't read reviews is because, especially with all like the news of how like publishers sort of strong arm reviewers into giving them really good ones, and so nothing ever falls below 70% really,
because
they don't want to lose their access or whatever.
I'm gonna give this game my lowest grade ever, A-.
So it, So you mentioned Metacritic. It seems in retaliation. To the hype or, you know, to the unbelievable amount of perfect reviews, a horde of fan kids or someone decided that they wanted to downgrade the Mass Effect 3 user reviews by just bombing Metacritic with negative reviews. And they cleaned most of those up. But if you go there now, it's still like teetering around 5 out of 10 or like 4.5 out of 10. And that's because people really hate the ending to that game. They really hate it.
But I mean, to hate the ending must mean that they're emotionally invested in the game. Do you know what I'm saying? To hate an ending, you have to get to the ending, and to get to the ending, you must kind of like the game.
Right.
I hate the ending to Shenmue 2 because it didn't finish.
A lot of people hate the ending to Mario 2. Because it was all a dream.
Yeah.
So full disclosure, I don't actually know the ending to Mass Effect 3 because I'm not done playing it yet. I'm about 30 hours in, although I'm sure easily
Should I look it up for you?
No. In fact, me admitting this on this show is probably going to have opened a torrent of people wanting to tell me what the ending is. I don't want to know. I want to play it and find out. And
so leave the ending in the comments.
Yeah, right. but I've been playing for about 30 hours now, and I'm sure a full quarter to a third of that is me having to pause the game to take care of my infant son, or some other distraction. But
wow, did you just qualify your infant son as a distraction from Mass Effect?
Listen, no, if it, you know, obviously he's more important than this game because I will leave it for him.
It's good to know.
Yeah, but
that world's greatest dad mug is practically yours.
Oh, jeez. So my point being that those 30 hours aren't actual gameplay, but that's still, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to characters, and you know, because I am also have that emotional investment. But you know, unlike these other people, I'm pretty sure that they're, and I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, overreacting. Because not everyone hates it. There's just the people who do hate it are very, very adamant about it and very, very loud. So loud that BioWare has announced that they have some plans to modify it.
Uh-huh.
Like they actually like came out with a full press release and everything. Which, has that ever happened in the history of video games? I'm not even sure. But you know, I bring this up because I not knowing what the ending is, I only know people's reaction to it. And just recently, there was a post on the social forums on BioWare that explained precisely what their problem was. And there was just quote after quote from the development team and other people at BioWare hyping up this game. Like, you know, explain how the ending was going to be, how the game experience was going to be. And that's what at least this poster was really upset about. And I'm sure lots and lots of other people. Because from my understanding, there's really only one ending, despite proclamations for years to the contrary of how they were going to handle things.
Mm.
So
I heard three.
You heard three?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I have to actually beat this game and a couple of times to find out for sure. But they're going to...
I mean, maybe I can give you a spoiler because I know nothing about Mass Effect. But just from what I've heard. All through this game, you could choose to be a good guy or a bad guy. You could choose to, you know, or you could choose to, I don't know, save some race or not. You know, all through this. And it would lead to a number of different paths. But in the end, you basically have three. You have a path where you die, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a spoiler.
No,
there's
because
always got to be a dying path.
Right, because the last game had a dying path, so I was expecting that.
There's a path where you're a bit ambiguous.
Uh-huh.
And there's a path where you do what the game determines to be the righteous ending.
And that's what people are upset about.
And I think that's what people are upset about, because there's a lot of, because the whole game was very open, you know, you could really, and like these, and like a lot of people, they felt that, that the ending that they achieved was not in line with how they'd been playing it.
Right.
Throughout the three games.
That's what I've been hearing. Yeah.
It seemed like the end was, it was, whereas there was some choice, even still, was too drastic of a shift.
Okay.
And that, I don't know, the person I was talking to said, if they just made 9 endings.
Right.
I don't know how that works out exactly. He's like, but like, apparently the game's so open that even that would cover everything, of course. But it would be a lot truer to, like, I didn't realize Mass Effect 3 was the end of the series.
Well, it's the end of Commander Shepard's story. At least that's what BioWare has been saying all these years. They may make more games in the Mass Effect universe, but as far as this character arc is concerned, they want to be done with it. And that's my understanding. But of course, who can trust that when their proclamations about the ending for Mass Effect 3 didn't really come to fruition?
I don't know if this is true or not, but it's just something I heard. Around my office, there's a lot of Mass Effect fans. There really are.
Oh.
And someone was saying something like some downloadable content which will provide other endings or something.
Right, right. That's not unreasonable, because that's precisely what the self-titled Prince of Persia game did. The ending was very bittersweet, and there was paid DLC you could get to sort of keep the story going, which really would have worked better as the beginning of a sequel, if you ask me. It kind of ruined the ending for me.
That's odd.
So I doubt BioWare is going to make people pay for DLC to get the ending they actually want. So I could be wrong, though.
Everybody lives happily ever after. Right? $4.99.
So let's circle back around to this, though, because there are other games that haven't lived up to the hype. And
really? I think every game never lived up to the hype.
I'm sure they're going to hit on similar themes as to why that wasn't possible. And the one that comes to mind for me is any Fable game, really. But Peter Molyneux, Molyneux.
Let's call him Mullinux. Because it sounds like an evil robot from the future. But I think it's Molyneux. But
Molyneux? Okay. Well, he's French, right? And and he's leaving Lionhead Studios, actually, after they finish making this final Fable game. Unnumbered adventure, whatever. But, you know, the Fable series was supposed to be like the end-all and be-all of like decision-making in RPGs and having a unique experience every playthrough, which obviously didn't come to pass. My first entry into the series was Fable 2, which is pretty much Zelda with condoms.
is that an original take on that?
I don't know if I said it first or just thought it at the same time as someone else did, but it's that's basically how I feel about it. And I played it around the same time I played Dragon Age, so the two mirrored each other kind of closely in my mind. And it was difficult when I'm playing Dragon Age not to think of Fable 2 a lot. Peter Molyneux would say things like how you'd only interface with the game through the dog or something like that, and there wouldn't be like classical menus, and that's never happened. He'll just say things because he's got these great ideas, but who knows if they'll ever implement them. And I think the real problem is just the difficulty in execution. I mean, do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I mean, you read interviews with this guy, and like, he says that, you know, it's a standard-breaking game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's fans, but, like, you know, the industry didn't, you know, shift because of it.
No. Well, they should change their name to Lying Head Studio.
Oh, I'm sure someone's made that joke before.
Yes. Someone has.
Someone who wasn't you.
Someone who wasn't me.
So you know, that didn't really deter me from the enjoyment of the game, because I had heard about the hype, and it actually made me avoid playing the first one. But I must have heard some good things about the second one from a friend, and so this is more important to me than reading reviews, honestly.
So do you think like it was a good game, but like the only thing that, I mean, like if you hadn't been so hyped up for it, you would have liked it more?
Well, I wasn't hyped up for this one in particular in the first place, so it didn't bother me. Although you want to talk about bad endings, it's one button press and it's over. So
what?
Yeah, the ending is like this extended cutscene. But it didn't bother me, honestly, because it's really more of the journey. And I'm sure I'll mention more about that later. But and that's why I didn't like Fable 3 so much, because they seemed to try and sort of ape what like Dragon Age was doing, or BioWare in general, after like trying to be these like trendsetters. And then they kind of released the same game as Fable 2, but not as fun, I suppose. And it was buggy.
Okay.
So that just turned me off to the whole series after that. You know, not because I was angry at like some story edict, but because it was just an unplayable mess. So, you know, that's a reasonable complaint, I think.
I guess. I mean, you can like something that doesn't live up to the hype. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. One of my favorite games, the only GameCube exclusive of the Capcom 5, Product Number 3, PN3.
Yeah.
The hype was like, you know, when you first saw it, it's like, wow, GameCube exclusive, really good pedigree designers, game that combines like rhythmic shooting and, you know, I don't know. I don't even remember, but I was really excited for it. And it was totally not that. Everyone was disappointed. But the thing is, like, the actual game that it was hyped up to be isn't really my type of game, but the actual game it was, I quite enjoyed.
Right. And that's kind of been my take on it for, you know, a lot of different games. But do you think you would enjoy that one better if you hadn't heard all the hype? Or is it just about the same?
I'm not sure. That's a really good question, but I think that when you don't hear anything about a game and you kind of pick one up a little bit on blind faith and it turns out to be great, it's so much better than a game that was hyped that still is great but just lived up to expectations.
Sure. You know, I'm starting to wonder if there's like two different kinds of hype now. There's fan based hype, which is what gets me to play games, and the recommendations I follow are usually pretty good. And then there's publisher based hype, which is almost always BS. Because what else are they going to say about their game? Well, it's fun, but it's not as good as our competitor. You can't believe that stuff. It's just advertising in general. If you really buy in to what they're saying, then you should lower your expectations just based on that. However, there's another thing that's going on, which relates to fan hype, in that people who like these games have really vivid imaginations, and they make all kinds of like fan art and stories. And what ends up happening is that, you know, these millions of people collectively can think of things that, you know, the development team, a much smaller pool of people, you know, could never implement because they don't work at the studio, and so they can't use your ideas for one thing without owing you money for it. And for another, you know, there's other things they have to worry about, practical development issues or narrowing the scope so it can be released. We don't like another Duke Nukem Forever on our hands. Take 12 years to release a game that, you know, can't be everything to everyone. It's okay for a game to just be fun, but you're never gonna hear a studio say that, you know, we think this game's okay. So
good enough.
Yep, let's put that out.
Well, okay, let's take it, like, often hype builds when a game's in development for a long time,
but not
development hell. Development hell can reduce hype for a game.
Yeah, development hell's a different thing altogether, because these are games that come out and have a reputation to live up to or not, based on previous games or just based on the aforementioned hype.
I think one of the biggest ones ever, a game that was just constantly hyped for years before anybody even really knew what it was Spore.
Yeah. I don't know what I expected from Spore, but it wasn't what we got.
Well, Spore, I mean, I think, I never, okay, admission here, I never played Spore.
Mm.
But a lot, when it came out, a lot of people really did enjoy it. A lot, but like, it sold terrible compared to the years and years of hype for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Because it was billed as a game where it was like The Sims, but with life and evolution.
Yeah, that wasn't accurate at all.
Yeah. You know, it was going to be a game where you could start with, like, a cell, and you could create pretty much anything. And, you know, it was beyond any other game at the time for doing, like, an evolutionary system and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely.
Beat the pants off of Pokemon. Yeah. But in the end, the hype was built to a point where nothing could have been what fans had been dreaming up in their own heads for those years.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I did buy and play this game, and what ended up stopping me was a hard drive crash. And I never reinstalled it. Part of the reason for that being, and part of the hype killing for me, was EA was starting to roll out its new copy protection schemes. So there was all this I don't want to say spyware or Trojan horses, but you know,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. They would install things on your computer surreptitiously without your knowledge or consent, and it would lock down your system. You know, just for a game that you own, and we're more used to that these days.
I'm not.
Okay, well, I don't buy a lot of PC games anymore anyway, which came out during our last episode. But
so I
don't have games like the Assassin's Creed 2 PC version that has to be connected to a server at all times. Stuff like that just turns me off to gaming in general.
Oh yeah.
Totally. You totally hit upon a very important point that, yeah, the imaginations of these people is just not going to live up to what they can do practically. And between like Spore and Fable and Mass Effect, I think the biggest problem is if you can make so many decisions and there's like a story edict, like, you know, it has to follow a certain arc.
Yeah.
What do you do? You can't make... So for instance, if you could play the first Mass Effect in such a way that it had drastically different endings, how do you make a sequel? You can't make three different games. You know?
If you played a good character, please buy sequel 3A.
Yeah. You know, and even less drastic than that, developers aren't going to spend their time working on something that only a fraction of the gamers are ever going to experience.
Yeah.
If
you have a game like that, it actually would, from sequel to sequel, increase. And I'm actually using the word correctly now.
Yes, yes.
Exponentially.
Yeah, because by the time you get to Mass Effect 3, you'd have like 9 Mass Effects.
Yeah.
Just for the third sequel, yeah.
You know, because, you know, if Mass Effect 3 could end three ways, and then each of those in the next one could end three ways, yeah, you've got 9. And if they made a Mass Effect 4, you know, by the time they get to Mass Effect 10... it's beyond my comprehension of math.
Right. That's like more games than they would release in 10 years. It's ridiculous. Yeah. So, you know, in practical terms, it was an experiment, you know, going game to game like that, taking decisions along and sort of reflecting on what they can do. But, you know, it runs up against the practical wall of, well, we need to tack a certain way. We can flavor the experience, and in some cases we'll even override them if it doesn't fit what we wanted to do. I know going from like 1 to 2, the decision about the Arachnite Queen didn't seem to have a lot of weight. I'm trying to think of other specific examples. You can choose who the human counselor is going to be at the end of the first game. And by the third game, it won't matter. They've made a decision that things went a certain way despite what decision you made. And there's a story reason for it to have, you know, gone to their canonical version, but it's still... it has to go down these narrow paths just because everyone has to have about, you know, maybe let's say 80, 85% the same experience, just so that from a development standpoint, they can make the game.
Yeah.
And that's Mass Effect's problem. Fable's problem was is that Peter Molyneux is insane.
Ouch.
He's not insane. He's just there's other barriers like the acceptance of the user. Yeah, over enthusiastic. And he'll say things he doesn't like mean. It's like, we're doing it this way. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if? And I agree, yeah, that would be cool, but you know, aside from implementation problems, there's acceptance by the players and the users. If it's too different from their normal experience, it's going to turn off a lot of people, especially casual gamers, the
yes,
forbidden
those
the CGs. I sometimes worry that our show isn't accessible to casual gamers.
You sometimes worry that a podcast about Japanese retro games might not be accessible. Hold on.
Yeah,
I gotta think this sentence through again.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Is this podcast really about that? I mean, we talk about those things and we love those things and they color everything we discuss, but you know, these are all Western developed games I'm talking about right now. Do you have any like, I guess the flip side of this are like games that either do live up to the hype or don't get a lot of sequels because they're so afraid of disappointing their fans. I mean, can you think of any?
Games that don't get sequels because they're afraid of disappointing
their fans. Well, not as frequently, you know? Like they have such a high bar to live up to that they had to be really careful. And like, you know, there wasn't a new Metroid game for a really long time before Metroid Prime came out.
That's true. There wasn't. Like, Super Metroid, and then like they skipped the N64 altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Metroid Prime had a lot of fans.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a fantastic game.
But when I saw it, I'm like, 3D Metroid? Pass.
Yeah, and they were worried about that.
I really did feel that way.
They, you know, I remember reading interviews, you know, with Nintendo developers, and they said that like one of the reasons they never released a 3D Metroid for the N64 was because A, they were going 3D with all their stuff, and B, the N64 was cool and all, but it just wouldn't do Metroid justice. And that sounds like a lazy answer, but you know, seeing, you know, going from like Super Metroid to Metroid Prime, I can't imagine, you know, a choppy, you know, super polygon, not well shaded, like Conker's Bad Fur Day, like Metroid. You know, it was fine for that game because it was silly.
Collect me 13 pieces of the armor suit.
Yeah. You know,
and some rubies.
I don't think they were blowing smoke up our you know what's there. I think that they were very serious about wanting to deliver a quality product, and the N64 just wasn't capable.
You know, I'll agree with you on that one. But I don't know. Like, it depends. Like, but the thing is, so many companies do release the cash-ins that just like ruin the series.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that Uncharted kart racer.
You know, many years ago, I made a joke that the only new Shenmue we'd ever get was if it was like a forklift racer or something. And then Sega released Sega All-Stars Racing, where you can race as a forklift. And I'm like, there's our Shenmue sequel. Stop complaining. I think there should be a Shenmue Where's Waldo crossover special.
Why Where's Waldo?
Oh, they just called Where's Sailors? And then you like, they'd finally finished the story through hidden object puzzles.
He never found any sailors, did he? He never met one, even though he was on a ship, for crying out loud.
I mean, they say that the overarching plot is that he's trying to avenge his father's death, but for me, I just want to know if he ever finds any sailors.
Okay, so there hasn't been a Shenmue sequel, and that makes me wonder something. Because I've talked to lots of people who won't even start playing the Mass Effect series just because the ending for the third game is getting so panned. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. Does that mean that like the entire first game is not worth playing. It has an ending. It has a good ending, if you ask me. There really is only the one, and you can make a few decisions around it. But if Mass Effect 2 had never come out, would that have been a bad game? Was the experience still not worth it, even if your decisions that never had the conclusion ever panned out?
Internet tells me yes.
I don't agree. And here's why I don't agree. It's because it's the theory that the only payoff you can have for a game is at the end. And there was a time, you know, when just playing the game was its own reward and being fun. I haven't beaten Mega Man 2 for years and years, but just the challenge of getting there, just playing through certain levels and enjoying the flavor of each one and getting through it. You play it over and over again. If you're like me.
You and I are different people. I played Pac-Man for the story. No, like you. I said before that Ninja Gaiden was I've done it again. Okay.
Gaiden.
Back to the Future. Okay. Sorry, we have to get in all the things we put in every single episode.
Right. Yeah, we got to work that one in more organically though. I think.
Me mispronouncing Ninja Gaiden.
Gaiden.
Gaiden. Yeah, Ninja Gaiden.
Final Fantasy IV, you mean two? Two, you mean four? Yeah. It's one of those
and then,
two.
And
yeah, yeah.
The Back to the Future.
This podcast has memes.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. But anyway. But in Pac-Man, between the levels, they had that thing where the ghosts are chasing him, and then he comes back as his really big Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah.
And then later, one of the ghosts, like, trips over a pellet and tears its costume. I don't know.
I think you've mentioned this before.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole reason I played Pac-Man. I wanted to see those cutscenes. And since I've yet to reach the end of Pac-Man, although I hear it's very disappointing.
thanks for playing! Something like that, I'm sure. No?
Kill screen where it just gets all messed up.
Oh, yeah.
The game ran out of memory and couldn't generate levels beyond that.
Congratulations, so, you broke the game.
Pretty much. So, like, I can't play Pac-Man because now I know how it's going to end, and it's very disappointing.
So
does Pac-Man ever find out who killed his father?
Did he find some sailors?
We won't know until the sequel.
Well, so you know, I would like to say that the reason we haven't seen a Shenmue 3 yet is because, you know, the first two games were so good and so loved that, you know, they couldn't make a third one. But the unfortunate fact is no one played it.
You know? I played it enough for everyone else on the planet.
You know, like, Shenmue was one of those first games where, you know, it did copy your save from the first one to the second one, only in the Dreamcast version, which never came out in America. It did come out in Europe, required you to load your VMU game save and alter it.
Save.
I did that.
What application did I have to download to do that? And it was complicated.
You had to go online.
Yep.
You'd use SegaNet to upload things. Yeah, that's stuff you can't really do anymore without other technologies. And I mentioned the last podcast, something very similar had to happen with the Mass Effect 3 face import.
Effect 3 is the sequel to Shenmue 2.
Oh my gosh! But like, you know, even worse and kind of emblematic of the problem of having to make decisions that need to carry over from game to game. The only stuff that really carries over is the date that you left for Hong Kong at the end of the first game. Because as soon as you land in Hong Kong, you get mugged and all your stuff gets stolen. All your collectibles.
You retain experience, though.
What's that?
Don't you retain some experience?
Yeah,
though?
I think you retain some experience. But, you know, it's not worth very much compared to what you've lost. It's like, you know, the game says, oh, you got to start over. And at least in games like Metroid Prime 2, it was at least adorable and kind of clever the way they explained how you lost all your super sweet badass powers.
Wasn't it dry cleaning?
Yeah, I think that was it. Just a return of the wrong super suit. No. but it was just like, oh, come on. But Shenmue 2 is still a fun game. But one, it's not even preferable to carry over your first game save, because there's this character, this little girl you meet in Hong Kong. And if you play the game normally, it starts at a certain date. And then while you're there, it's this little girl's birthday. And it's like this whole interaction with her that I totally missed because I showed up a month after her birthday and never stayed the full year
to
come around again. I didn't know. How was I supposed to know? So, you know, there's downfalls to that approach, too. I'm just saying.
Okay. Game that was hyped like crazy that totally disappointed. Daikatana.
You know, I never played it. I just heard it was disappointing and therefore never played it.
I think the title is disappointing. Dai, big, katana, sword. Big sword.
Yeah.
But I remember my friend bought it full price, $50. And because it had tons of hype. The ad like, John Romero's going to make you his bitch, or... That was like the ad. And it was in production for years and years and years. And it finally came out, and it was just nothing special.
That's too bad to hear. I almost bought a used copy just to see what it was like, but I haven't done it yet.
Well, get the N64 version.
There was more than just the N64. That's the only one I'm even aware of.
Oh, no, it was mainly a PC game. It's kind of weird that it got a console port, actually. Because it did so badly on PC, it's kind of surprising that the console version ever came out.
But, sure.
I've never played either of them. But the reaction to it was... But I wonder today... if it was really actually that bad of a game, or if it was just that the hype was so strong that it didn't live up to it. But I'm thinking more that it actually was a bad game, though.
Yeah, just like seeing screenshots, it's like, and I wasn't sure what to make of it, and it didn't seem like anything special. You can't really market a game on the strength of the developer's ego, Peter Molyneux.
Yeah. He's not listening to our podcast.
Are you sure? Nintendo listens.
That's true.
We've proven it.
Nintendo, I'd like to thank you for a game that totally lived up to the hype.
Yeah.
Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh, man. So I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I never finished Mario Galaxy.
Why?
Well,
are you allergic to fun?
No. I got it and I brought it over to the OA house and everyone there played it. So I got to see a lot of the game without ever playing it myself. And this is in 2007. So what came out that fall? Beautiful Katamari, Rock Band, and Mass Effect.
All right. The first two games you mentioned should not have gotten in the way of your Mario, but I know you have a thing for Mass Effect.
So that pretty much ended my desire to get a lot of new Wii games as well. That's when the 360 picked up for me, and a lot of good games came out after that.
And now for the controversial statement of the podcast.
Yeah.
Things that didn't live up to the hype. The Wii.
Right. Okay. And you know why I agree with you? Because everyone made fun of it. Everyone, including me.
Yep.
And slowly the name and the controller and everything about it became kind of cool. And people became very hyped about it. And it was the first system I ever camped out overnight to buy. Like, yep. I got a GameCube at midnight launch, but there was like a line of maybe 20 people, you know. At midnight, inside a Walmart that, you know, is open 24 hours, so that wasn't a big deal.
But I mean, it's not. I love the Wii. That is my most bought system of this generation. Over, you know, like I have a PlayStation 3, but I have many more Wii games. I even bought more Wii games than I bought DS games, which was a beloved system. Yeah,
that's saying a lot. Yeah.
And if people say that we had a bad library, if you go by ratio of good games to bad games, yes, we had a terrible library. But there are so many games on the Wii that there are plenty of classics. However, the what they explained the Wii controller as and what it actually turned out to be is very different.
Yeah, 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 that's
everyone
that's
was
true.
Expecting lightsaber sword battles, but really it was very imprecise.
Yeah, even the Motion Plus doesn't really improve that.
Well, it improved it a lot, but it's too little too late.
Right, right.
Like, Wii Motion Plus is how we should have shipped, and it's how everyone thought it did ship.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, they did very clever ways, like the WarioWare game and stuff, that made it that you could accomplish what you were trying to do without being so responsive. But, like, my friend Alex would play Wii Tennis by sitting on the couch and occasionally twitching. And he could beat anybody. Who, you know, it was not nearly as fun, but like it showed that people went, oh, it's so realistic for tennis because actually I'm this good in real life, you know?
Yep, yep.
Because, you know, but it's not. It was an approximation of reality. I still love the Wii. Yeah. Very much so, but that is definitely a system that didn't live up to the hype.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, controversial statement number two.
Okay.
And this is one that I hope I'm wrong, and I really, really hope I'm wrong. But the adventure game that Double Fine Studios are making right now, can it possibly be as good as what we all think that it's going to be?
I don't even care if it's good. I just want to play an adventure game.
I know, but like,
how good do we think it is? Because I have no expectations. I have not watched a single video about it.
Have you played Monkey Island?
No.
What? Okay. Have you played Grim Fandango?
No.
Have you played Full Throttle?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I played Brutal Legend.
Okay. So Tim Schafer.
Yeah.
You familiar with him?
Yeah, I'm
Maybe
cool with
you're
him.
Not Maybe you're not as familiar with the Ron Gilbert side.
No.
Who's, you know, Monkey Island series.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, I'm aware of Monkey Island. I'm
aware
it's a good game.
But you're aware of his pedigree, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That would be like, I don't know, like God and Buddha, like the Jesus and Buddha teaming up to make a super religion.
Right, right.
That's the dumbest example I've ever made. But anyway... Yeah.
Oh my.
Maybe that's my third controversial statement. But anyway. but like the people involved with it have made like the games that like in adventure games that's like you know, amazing.
Uh-huh.
It, you know, and they say that it's going to be like a traditional adventure game. And so in my mind I'm thinking like the Monkey Island 4 that should have happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, rather than the weird 3D one that we got. But or something like that. Like in my mind, I'm picturing my ideal adventure game because they keep talking about bringing it back, but my idea of what they're making is probably different from other people's idea of what they're making.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, they can't please everyone, and
exactly.
People are imaginative, and they're also a little crazy. They're never going to do some of the things that you're thinking of.
He'd never betray me. He'd never. Look at him. Look at those soulful eyes. He's going to make the game that I want. Make the game that I want.
I don't care what... I don't expect anything of them. I just want them to make a good game and I'll play it. I just wanted to be a part of something that was, you know, unique. And it can be a terrible game for all I care, but it you know, they have incentive now to make it as good as they possibly can because they have...
No, they don't. Now they know that people named Sean will play it regardless.
Oh, whatever. No, they have like seven times the funding they asked for. They can make seven mediocre games or one really great game.
But that's the thing, though. In my mind, it has a lot to live up for. And there's a lot of other games that have a lot to live up to just because of the pedigree. Maybe not of the developers, but of the series.
Yeah.
Angry Birds Space better be really good. Not to bad. It's a horrible example.
I don't know. The story of
doesn't need to be anything other than Angry Birds in space. I mean,
yeah.
And it will sell a million, billion times.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
No offense to Rovio. We love those guys. But you know, you slap Angry Birds on something and you've got your product right there.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a little kid, you know, wearing Angry Birds like a hat, like a, you know, winter hat. Yeah. Goes over their ears. So yeah. If I may circle back around to the theme of endings, since our podcast will be ending relatively soon.
Okay.
Go right ahead. Would you say this podcast is a failure if we didn't end it properly?
I think we should stop right there.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, goodbye.
No, okay.
That would be our experiment.
Right. Just end it in mid-sentence, and then it'll be like, you know, this great unfinished work that'll be revered forever. What were they going to say next? Yeah. So, I mean, like
Steelers?
Yeah. Is Shenmue, like, are people clamoring for the next game because they want to know how the story ends? Or did they enjoy the first two games so much that they just want to have a new experience with that universe and that character? Because the implication that a game or a series of games is only as good as the ending of the last one implies that the desire to see the next one has nothing to do with the enjoyment of the previous iterations. That it's just like, you know what? It doesn't matter what happened now. I just want what's next. Give me something new. And that's just pessimistic, and I don't like that idea.
Controversial statement number four.
Okay.
Is that Shenmue as a series is continuing right now without the Shenmue.
How do you mean?
If you look at the Yakuza series.
Okay.
Of games. It's very much that open world like it. Mixture of the fighting and, you know, just going around talking to people. Kind of living world type game. Mm-hmm. You know, also mm-hmm. made by Sega. Not
right.
with the involvement of Yu Suzuki. And, of course, it's very different. But, like, that's definitely the most direct spiritual successor to the Shenmue series.
Sure. Kind of like Assassin's Creed's a good version of the Prince of Persia Sands of Time series.
So, yeah. controversial statement number five. Okay. So, but like, I'm emotionally invested in the story of Shenmue. Though.
Right.
But the thing is, the reason I am emotionally invested in the story is because I liked playing the game so much.
Yeah.
So I it's hard to separate the two. Now, a lot of fans go, write a novel that finishes up the thing.
Yeah.
Finishes up Shenmue, so we just know how it ends.
No. But
that's not me. I want another game.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, you know.
I really enjoyed the Penny Arcade games, for instance, and they only did two episodes out of at least three that they were planning.
There's another one coming, though.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say is that they did try and finish the story for that.
As a comic, right?
As a comic. And then, because they're never going to do a game, it's like, oh, whoops, we're going to do a game now. And, you know, that game was never about the story for me. It was just fun to play. I mean, beating up hobos, how can you beat that?
Oh, my gosh. I just realized that I have both Penny Arcade Adventure games on my computer. I bought the first one, I believe, right shortly after it came out and was really enjoying it. But when I heard that the series was discontinued, I never even played the second game.
Oh, man. The second game was the first game I ever on Xbox that I ever got all the achievements for, by the way. I don't think I've gotten all the achievements for any other game. I have over 1,000 for a few of them, but that's because of all the DLC. I haven't finished a lot of them, so.
but I mean, I get. So it's worth. Well, now that the one's been announced, I just don't have the time. Maybe I'll go back to that game. It's actually the launcher icon is sitting on my desktop.
The second one's a bit different from the first one, but it's still pretty fun. They refine some of the issues of the first game, which there aren't that many, honestly, but it's a better game. And I just really hope that the third installment's going to continue that crazy, crazy vibe.
So, there's Sean.
Yeah.
I think we're having a problem with us. So
ending
every topic seems to relate directly back to our work.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, we talked about development hell, which is what our new episode of the show is in. And now we've been talking about it so long, can it possibly be as good as people think it's going to be? like we've hyped this thing. Like we're like, the next episode is going to be our best work ever. Like it has to be now.
It's different enough, I think, that people are going to enjoy it. But I don't want to say, from my perspective, it's better than other things. It's just different, and it's we're trying something new, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But I think the knowledge too that we're not going to do everything like that, and there are other ones coming, that are just as equally experimental and still possibly a lot of fun. Can mitigate potentially any blowback we get from what we're about to do. So.
I don't want to inflate the hype train, but
yeah.
But the next episode of Famicom Dojo has Oscar-worthy writing.
That is complete.
Incredible production value. It will change the way you love and look at life.
Yeah.
It will improve your golf game.
Ooh.
You will lose 15 pounds just by watching it, yet gain 10 pounds of muscle.
Wow. That's completely plausible.
We will all remember the day we first watched that episode.
Yes.
And it will be a comparable event in the future of lore to the moon landing. And that other thing that everybody remembers.
Yeah, the Mars landing.
Mars landing.
I just watched Captain Kirk's speech.
But I don't want to overhype it, though.
No. We can't do that. You know, watching Famicom Dojo is really more about the journey than the destination. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, but like, seriously, though. Endings aren't everything. If you want your payoff, okay. Mass Effect 3, for instance. I'm getting my payoff every mission. Everything calls back to something from an earlier game and provides new content at the same time. So I'm enjoying the results of all my choices as I play every step of the way. And so it doesn't even matter how it ends anymore to me, because I think by the time I get to that point, I will have experienced everything that I've wanted to know. I might be wrong, but I've already been given so much and haven't played maybe less than half of the game that I can't imagine how an ending could possibly beat that, you know, admittedly prolonged experience. So
life's a journey, not a destination.
I think we've arrived at ours, though.
Oh.
At long last. at least for this week.
So with that, I would just like to invite everyone in our comments section to write a game that you were so thrilled about that turned out to be a disappointment, or one that you think never really got the hype it deserved. Because both of those are very interesting. And a topic we didn't hit on, but we're very interested in talking about in the future, are games where the pressure is so high to make another game lived up to the series pedigree.
Yeah, ones where they're actually released.
Anything like by Blizzard or the next Zelda or Final Fantasy, not so much anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, something or a series that maybe they just leave alone.
Yeah. What would you rather they didn't make a sequel to? Uncharted Kart Racing. It's part of the pattern. Crash Bandicoot, Jack and Dexter.
I don't know. Let's see how Kid Icarus turns out.
Right?
But no, perfect. I think that one should be good. Anyway.
It's been about 25 years since the last one, I think. That game was so good they couldn't possibly follow it up for a generation.
No, they made a sequel for the Game Boy.
Oh, whatever. That was still like 20 years ago.
Sorry. But anyway, the next podcast we have will be our best podcast ever.
Wow.
It will be star-studded. There will be several Hollywood actors in our studio. The podcast will be Oscar-worthy commentary. So, wow. Like, if you bought a DVD of a movie that won an Oscar, the commentary track would be similar to how we sound next week.
You know, we make commentary tracks for our own DVDs, in fact. So if you bought a copy of the Famicom Dojo Season 1 DVD, you could hear an excellent Oscar-worthy soundtrack or commentary track.
And there's the last name that we plug our DVD.
Please visit us at famicomdojo.tv or talk to us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo, our free iTunes storefront where you can leave feedback and rate the show, let everyone know what you think, and of course our awesome videos, which we will release, but if you haven't caught up already, want to see more Mass Effect goodness, there's some as a keep playing series there, and that's YouTube, that's Orange. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next week when everything is going to be better than it was before.
Yep, with downloadable content.
Oh yeah. And with that, the dojo is closed.
Ooh, nice phrase.
I don't know if I like it.
And now my catchphrase.
Yes.
Buy one, get one free.
Good night.
Famicom Dojo.